ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm Peter Martin, host of The Economy Stupid, where we find economics in relationships.
She only wants a man if he's really, really good.
In the Reserve Bank board.
I knew. Everybody on the board knew recession was coming.
And in food.
It's about the cup of diesels required through the life cycle to get that chicken patty on your burger.
The Economy Stupid. Search for The Economy Stupid on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
For these people who have attempted these transactions, we have a long canceling these transactions for you. We haven't allowed these transactions to leave your account.
A recording of a scammer impersonating a staff member at HSBC Bank, telling the customer over the phone that he's preventing funds being stolen from their account, when in fact he's doing the exact opposite.
We are responsible for your funds and all of your assets, okay?
Hi, Damien Carrick here. This is The Law Report on ABC Radio National. And today, we're talking scams.
I'm just going to look into getting an appointment made for you to go into branch.
Mm-hmm.
Just give me a moment.
The scammer, who sounds highly professional and very reassuring, was part of a sophisticated fraud that fleeced HSBC customers across Australia. Up until now, the bank has denied responsibility for its customers' losses, which exceeded $100 million between the years 2021 and 2024. But HSBC has just announced that it will not fight an action brought by the corporate regulator ASIC, which seeks to hold the bank accountable for its inadequate security protections. Sunny Wan lost nearly $50,000 in the scam. She went on to form a support group for HSBC customers who were deceived in the same way.
It was like a quiet Friday night in at home, and then I received a text message saying that another device has been logged in another location from the HSBC number.
So you got that message on an existing thread of messages from HSBC, yep.
Yes, 4 years. So I thought it was a legitimate text message from the HSBC number. And if it wasn't me, then to call the number that was on the text message. So I called the number on the text message, and the person on the other end basically asked me to verify the exact same verification questions as a HSBC customer representative would have, like their date of birth, where I live, full address. Even asked me name the last two transactions in the last 7 days, and they had that information, and it was all correct.
So they had information about you?
Yes.
So what did this person ask you to give them at that point?
Basically, they said that another phone had to be logged in another location. Coincidentally, I actually did lose a S9 phone at the time. So I thought it was, oh, okay. And he said to generate a one-time passcode for them to lock that phone, so that I thought I was being saved from getting funds taken out. But in fact, they were actually the scammers.
How quickly did you realise that you were being scammed?
I didn't realise until they were asking me about whether I had a CoinSpot account.
This is a cryptocurrency account, right?
Yes, it's an Australian cryptocurrency exchange, yes.
Yeah. So at that point, you realise there's no way HSBC Bank could have known about that.
Correct. And I was like, why is he asking me about my cryptocurrency? HSBC wouldn't care about that. That's when alarm bells started ringing in my head. And then I straight away hanged up. And then I called HSBC straight away through the 1-300 number. And I asked them to stop the payment because it just happened, right? But unfortunately, the customer on the other end was saying that it's gone through, nothing can be done. And I had to wait for the fraud team to investigate. And it was gone, basically. And I told them to freeze it. It's just gone. I thought usually it's too large amounts. Plus, it's never been transferred out to that bank account. So I thought there would have been a 24-hour holding period, but there wasn't any alerts or anything like that on the system. And they just told me to wait for the fraud team to investigate.
And what did the fraud team tell you?
Basically, they just said it's my fault because I gave them the one-time passcode. I raised a complaint, obviously. Yeah, it was just very hard. They just basically told me, good luck. You know, I was crying and brawling inside the branch. Yeah, they just told me nothing can be done. Keep waiting while the fraud team investigates. And I kept chasing up, nothing. And in the end of the day, it was like, it's already gone. They can't recall it. So it was very traumatic. And the response was very appalling, considering it was a very big bank globally. And it was a horrendous experience.
Did you ultimately get your money back?
I ultimately did get my money back, but other people, unfortunately, did not get their money back. Maybe some people didn't even get only 50% of their money back. I know one person in our current group, in that one victim, she still didn't have any of her money back. Her case was closed like 2 years ago. So she's still fighting and she's still, you know, wanting justice for herself. But I was one of the lucky ones to get the full amount back. But that's not enough because of all the time that we spent the whole year for like our time in the traumatic experience, the feeling, emotional, the stress, everything is just doesn't, you know, it should be more compensated than just our money back.
Are you hopeful that now that there's been a settlement between ASIC and HSBC, hopefully everybody will get their money back? Is that your hope from this settlement?
Yes. Well, hopefully that HSBC will take accountability and return the money for all the victims and even the victims that only got partially their money back. But not just the money, but also the financial stress and the emotional stress that we all went through. And some people, you know, are in worse situations. They have families, you know. Can you imagine losing $50,000 to $100,000 and you got babies to feed? You know, that's just very hard time, very stressful. I can't imagine. So HSBC should definitely take accountability and return the money to all the victims.
Stephanie Tonkin is the CEO of the Consumer Action Law Centre, which assisted some of the HSBC scam victims. Stephanie, how significant is this decision by HSBC not to contest ASIC's action?
This is significant in the context of incredibly significant proceedings. HSBC, in relation to this litigation and these customers, has fought tooth and nail through defending claims at the Financial Complaints Authority, through really bold individual decisions of dispute resolution, denying liability. So to turn around after fighting and defending this proceeding to now is a big move.
So what form did the scams take and how many people were defrauded?
So this was a bank impersonation scam. It ran for a long time, 4.5 years, leading to millions of dollars in losses and hundreds of customers losing tens of thousands of dollars individually. HSBC was aware of the gaps in their system, but they didn't fix it for at least 18 months, didn't stop the scam despite being aware of the holes in its own systems. There were high numbers of customers with exactly the same circumstances, long delays in receiving complaints from customers and processing, investigating and blocking and unblocking accounts as well, sometimes up to 12 months for someone to regain access to their bank account. In this proceeding as well, it was significant that many times the sending and receiving bank in a lot of these cases was HSBC, so they had full vision over the scams. More generally, the regulator ASIC has pointed out that there was a fundamental lack of systems and controls that would be expected for a bank that is forcing its customers to transact online and move their money around online through digital services. The security measures that HSBC had in place were woefully inadequate.
So as I understand it, this was a sophisticated bank impersonation scam. So the criminals would imitate HSBC bank employees and maybe send them text messages or phone them up, and they appeared to come from HSBC. Tell me about some of the victims and the kind of losses that they experienced.
Yes, that's right. So the bank impersonation scam, those SMSs coming from HSBC and those text messages appearing in line with the other legitimate HSBC texts and directing customers to call a particular number in that message. These are so sophisticated, these scams, and it, when you get down into the nitty-gritty of what happened, anyone would be tricked and manipulated by the scammers, like the victims we'd spoken to at Consumer Action Law Centre. So the types of things that were happening are people would be calling up their bank and the music that was playing, the IVR system, the scripting was identical to the legitimate HSBC system. And people were told, there's been this transaction. Is that fraudulent on your account? Have you transferred to Amazon? No, I haven't. Okay, well, I need to now block that and put some security measures on your account. I'm going to send you some passcode. Can you read it out to me? And what they were doing was setting up one-time passwords that were being legitimately sent to the customer. And then the customer was reading it out, having built trust with this scammer online on the phone. And then by passing over that one-time passcode, the scammer was able to then log into the customer's account. Meanwhile, there's two calls and two transactions happening from other sides of the globe. And the scammers were able, because they had these one-time passcodes, to then log in, make the transactions. And what we heard was transactions just below the transfer limits, so just under $20,000 or just under $50,000. And that might have been one per day for a few days. And as you can see, you would expect if there are suspicious transactions to new accounts, $19,500 going out every single day for 4 days, that should be setting off some alarm bells.
Is it correct to describe the failing of HSBC as one of not investing enough in its IT? So when these transactions came up, they weren't red flagged. There wasn't the infrastructure and the systems which would identify these shonky transactions.
That's right. ASIC's case in these proceedings was HSBC failed to have adequate controls in place to prevent and detect unauthorised payments.
So how would you describe the bank's response to the scam victims when they came forward?
Well, one of the striking things about this particular proceeding and the many victims that we spoke to at Consumer Action was that the circumstances were all identical and the response was very much the same. It was an absolute denial of responsibility and it was a delayed response in terms of getting back to customers. There are requirements around how long a bank, and it's a matter of days that a bank needs to investigate and come back to a customer. They took months and months to investigate this and would come back and say, well, it's your fault. Sorry, there's nothing we can do. For some people we spoke to, they were signed up to non-disclosure agreements and lowballed a small amount of money in compensation to make them go away. For other clients or victims that we spoke to, they did fight it in AFCA and HSBC was incredibly combative.
The Australian Financial Complaints Authority.
That's right, the Ombudsman. And so with HSBC, for some of these cases, there was a lead Financial Complaints Authority determination, which laid out the fact that HSBC was so combative that AFCA took the sometimes unusual step of awarding the legal fees and non-financial loss to the claimant, to the scam victim, because of how adversarial HSBC was in relation to that complaint.
And had HSBC been warned about its lax scam protections?
It received hundreds and hundreds of complaints from its own customers that were pointing to this exactly the same scam happening over and over again for a period of 4.5 years. The ACCC's Scam Watch issued an alert in early 2024, warning the community and also obviously HSBC of the existence of this scam and the risks. But still, the scam continued in the same way to harm victims. And in fact, that is ASIC's case, that there were breaches of the e-payments code, there were breaches of the banking code of practice, those breaches, and more globally, the failure to have adequate security controls in place to prevent and detect these unauthorized payments, all amounted to breaches of their license conditions. And that's the basis of the enforcement proceedings.
So it was a breach of the bank's financial services licensing conditions. That was the basis of the action brought by ASIC.
That's right. The financial services license and also the credit license.
And most of the victims are Chinese Australians. Why is that?
I think that represents the customer base of HSBC, although we spoke to a whole range of different people, all of whom had fallen victim to the very same scam.
So HSBC has just announced that it will not contest the action brought by ASIC, which I think was about to go to commence trial. What sort of outcome is ASIC looking for? What will happen now?
So now what will happen is the parties will, on the June hearing date, will file a statement of agreed facts, and they have to file some additional evidence that goes to the penalty that the judge will award. They'll propose a settlement, but it's up to the trial judge to ensure that it is in the public interest and it's appropriate. So it could shift around from what is agreed. In the proceeding, ASIC was seeking penalty orders and its costs. There wasn't an order in the original motion for compensation of victims, but I'm hopeful that there might be something in the settlement, or if not, that HSBC does go and conduct a thorough audit of all the people who it's lowballed, settled and signed up to non-disclosure agreements, all the people it's denied claims for, and fully compensate, even with additional compensation for what they've been through.
And it would be your view that it's extremely important that the individual scam victims are compensated?
Yes, absolutely.
Among the victims to be partially compensated by HSBC is Betty, who lost $115,000 from her and her husband's joint mortgage account.
Well, we received a text from HSBC saying that our account has been hacked, and there was a number there. We were panicking and called the number instead of, you know, checking to see that it's a valid HSBC number. And when we spoke to them, it was a British accent. And he said that our account has been hacked and we need to quickly go to the HSBC branch to block the account. A few minutes into that call, I just had this thing that there's something not right about the talk. And we immediately called HSBC on our other phone to ask them to block the account. And I called several times, actually, just to make sure that it has been done. But after a few attempts, they couldn't identify us anymore. Because it was a weekend, we went to the branch on the morning of the first weekday. But as soon as we went into the branch, the officer looked at our account and called the fraud team. And the person who came on the fraud team looked at our account and said that the transfers shouldn't have happened because our accounts were not blocked.
Even though you had called and asked for your accounts to be blocked almost immediately, they had not been blocked and the transfers had continued.
Yes, that's right. It was not blocked until when the fraud officer blocked it.
So you lost, I think, something like $115,000 out of you and your husband's joint mortgage account. Have you received any reimbursement from HSBC?
We did. Over time, we received up to $90,000, but the first goodwill they offered us was $500.
HSBC and ASIC, they've now reached an agreement just a few days ago to settle the action commenced by ASIC. What are you hoping for out of that agreement? We don't know the terms yet. The settlement hasn't been reached, but what are you hoping for?
I'll be happy as long if I get back my $25,000. And obviously, if I can get the interest that has been generated, that would be great. Any more than that, I'm not even sure how hopeful I can be, you know, in terms of the stress that we have gone through for this.
Would you be satisfied if HSBC simply have a given a big fine, which they have to pay to the government or to ASIC, or do you really want compensation for your particular loss?
I would like compensation, really, simply because, you know, that amount is not insignificant for us. We have to work hard for it, which I'm doing now, just so that we can reduce our mortgage faster.
Betty, a client with HSBC Bank who fell victim to a scam. This is the Law Report on ABC Radio National. Today, talking scams, which come in many different forms. Some hook victims in slowly over a period of months. Dana Beglari is a consumer solicitor with New South Wales Legal Aid. She says there has been a substantial increase in the number of people asking the agency for help after being duped out of their money through online scams. Dana says romance scams can be particularly damaging to victims.
The key element with all of these scams is that they involve an element of deception where the scammer is trying all different kinds of tactics to trick their victim into giving them money. And the romance scams are really preying on people's emotions and vulnerabilities to convince them to hand over their money and their personal details.
New South Wales Legal Aid is acting for a man, you're calling him Luke. Who is he and what happened to him?
Yeah, that's right. Unfortunately, Luke fell victim to a romance scam, someone living overseas on a dating website. Just to give you a picture about Luke's circumstances, for the past 5 years, he hasn't been able to work for medical reasons, and he suffers from a range of physical and mental health conditions. And when he stopped working, he received a large workers' compensation payout, and he's received payouts for his total and permanent disability insurance cover. So he had a significant sum of money in his bank account. When he connected with the scammer told Luke that she needed some help transporting some valuables that she'd inherited in Australia so that she could live with him. And Luke was persuaded by the scammer, and he transferred thousands of dollars at a time of his own money to different overseas accounts over multiple transactions. And unfortunately, the pattern continued for some months. But eventually Luke became concerned that he was a victim of a romance scam. The scammer was making excuses that she couldn't travel to Australia and that she needed money to pay for a loved one's medical expenses. And Luke started to become a bit suspicious, and he reported the scam to his bank. And he also came to Legal Aid New South Wales at that point for some advice.
And how much money had he actually lost?
Unfortunately, millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars?
Yes, millions of dollars of money that he'd received because of his illnesses and his inability to work. And Luke has told us that the scams left him with nothing. He says that he has no money, that he's lost weight, he can't access Centrelink at the moment because of the way he's been scammed and lost the money. He said that his life was set up and now he feels like he has nothing.
And presumably he can't access Centrelink because he was somebody with a high asset base there for a while.
Yeah, and Legal Aid's looking into that issue with him to see what we can do to support in terms of making some comments to Centrelink about the situation.
You've been able to help him in that way. Have you been able to work towards getting his money back? Is that even a possibility?
Yeah, we are working with Luke at the moment to explore the complexities of his claim, and we're starting to unravel the different elements of the scam. And what we're exploring as well at the moment with the bank is whether there's a possibility to get any money back from the bank. But unfortunately, it can be really hard to get money back in these situations. And there's really only limited obligations that your bank or financial institution has in respect of scams.
So is the idea that the bank should have been diligent for these kinds of transactions, that they should have been aware that there was a real danger or a real risk that he was being scammed?
Yeah, so banks or finance companies aren't responsible for picking up or blocking every scam, but they do have some obligations like acting with due care and skill and making inquiries about transactions in certain circumstances. So really it comes down to whether the bank was aware of the scam, how aware they were of the scam, and what role they played in the transaction.
And have you managed in the past to obtain compensation from a bank for this type of loss?
The wins that we've had are often a very small fraction of the amount that people have lost. So I haven't had any matters where we've been able to recoup the entire amount that's been lost, especially where we're talking about these matters where hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars have been lost to scammers.
I would imagine the banks say, well, look, how could we have known?
Yeah, that can be the case. And it's a really tricky situation because there's a third party here. There's a bad actor, which is the scammer. And so that's the really challenging thing. They're often based overseas and untraceable. And so it's really just exploring a person's complaint against a bank and seeing whether there's any of those duties that the bank hasn't complied with in terms of acting with due care and skill and making those relevant inquiries. And there's certain scenarios where we particularly focus on. So we have a look at whether there were any fraud fraud reports that have been triggered in the bank's internal systems, whether they're the regulators like ASIC or the ACCC have notified banks and the public about this particular scammer or the particular business, and then also the client's circumstances and the circumstances of the transactions. What did the client say to the bank? What were the circumstances of making the transfers?
Returning to Stephanie Tonkin from the Consumer Action Law Centre, I asked how effective is Australia's legal framework more broadly when it comes to dealing with scams, and what is the scam prevention framework?
Well, we've been discussing general law principles and obligations on businesses to protect their customers and respond to complaints in certain timeframes, but last year in February, the government passed the Scam Prevention Framework. It's a set of laws that will, once they go live, force businesses to take action to prevent, disrupt, respond to scams.
So place proactive responsibilities on these corporations.
That's right. And, you know, across the ecosystem and in different sectors. So it's an ambitious approach to regulating scams because it draws in all these different sectors and requires them to work together to disrupt scams. So it's really ambitious. And it's fantastic in the sense that it is focused on prevention. However, this approach is proving really difficult to bring to life. We need codes of practice. They're being drafted now, but it's very difficult. We need codes of practice at the highest order, really strong obligations so that our businesses are keeping pace with the scammers that are highly resourced, industrialized corporations that are innovating. We're seeing the use of AI and biometrics and deepfake technology now on our frontline services. People are reporting all sorts of sophisticated scams. So we need the strongest obligations possible on the businesses that are caught by the scam prevention framework so that we all have this moment of lifting up and fortifying Australia from the global scams problem.
Do other countries do this better?
Well, at the moment, in the UK, there's a reimbursement system, so much more consumer-focused in the sense that if someone is scammed, a bank is on the hook to reimburse those losses. And the idea being that incentivises the bank to then invest more in prevention measures. Our government's taken a different approach in trying to target the whole ecosystem across those various sectors. And therefore, we don't have a reimbursement framework. It's going to be very difficult and looking incredibly difficult for a consumer to actually bring a claim successfully, but fingers crossed. But what's happened is because of the complexity, it's proving very, very difficult to build out those codes of practice, what the actual obligations will be. And therefore, what I'm fearful of is we're going to push through a substandard, pragmatic, common denominator approach just to get something through. And what that's going to do is bake in the status quo. And last year, losses to scams increased by nearly 8% to $2.18 billion. That's a frightening amount of money. Australians, ASIC's latest report is banks reimburse just 2 to 5% of those losses. So this is a incredible drain on Australians' wallets. So incredibly important that the highest order of obligations placed on businesses to do everything they can to prevent, disrupt and respond to scams effectively.
Stephanie Tonkin, CEO of the Consumer Action Law Centre. That's all we've got time for this week. Do follow the Law Report on ABC Listen. That way you'll get the latest podcast as soon as it becomes available. A big thanks to producer Christina Cucoglia and also to audio producer Ari Gross. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk soon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.